We got a Black Hawk down. We got a Black Hawk down.
Mrs. French's cat is missing. The signs are posted all over town. Have you seen Honey? We've all seen the posters, but nobody has seen Honey the cat.
Statistical fact, cops will never pull over a man with a huge bong in his car. Why? They fear this man. They know he sees farther than they. And he will bind them with ancient logics.
And probably the most important thing, don't ever feed him after midnight.
Biblical.
What he means is Old Testament, Mr.
Yes.
Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Exactly.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Welcome again to the Good Trash Genre Cast, where we, a couple guys who are part of a film society at the University of Central Oklahoma, have continued podcasting into the ether, into the internets, talking about trash movies and what they mean. Today, we finish our Shocktober, October horror movies because, you know, no one does that.
Nope.
And
not a one.
We're totally...
Next year, we'll do it in July.
Completely
ahead of the game.
Original. We don't know what to do, though. I'll be surprised.
Can we do Christmas in July?
I think we can watch
The Pack again.
We're done with Christmas movies.
Yeah,
the Pack was a Christmas movie.
You've already done the best, which is Die Hard.
Yeah.
Moving on. We are going to introduce ourselves here shortly, and then we're going to talk about a movie called The Pack. I begin to my left, sir, if you'd introduce yourself.
My name is Dalton Stewart, and I recently got a new job with my fancy BA in sociology.
Excellent. We're very proud to hear that. To my right.
I am Arthur Gordon, and you had me at Wes Anderson.
Finally, I am Mr. Roger's evil twin. My name is Dustin Sells, and I am happy, happy to be with you all here today.
Who's Roger?
Mr. Rogers.
Oh, because of your sweater vest.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I wasn't going to make fun of you today.
Hey, we're going to watch a movie and talk about it. We're going to talk about a movie called The Pack. This is a analysis show, not a review show. There will be spoilers. And spoilers. Lots of spoilers. The fun of this movie, dear listener, we will warn you. I think we can agree. I haven't spoken to the gentleman on air. But the fun is not knowing. Correct?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So,
the triumphant return of Casper Van Diem.
Yes, Johnny Rico.
Really excited. I got really excited about that.
He got old.
He aged well.
He's got a real grizzled kind of veteran.
He's got a grizzled handsome.
Probably because his career was so awful.
Anyway, so we will be doing spoilers. We'll first do a little bit of what you might hear on a review show. We're going to do a synopsis, and then we're going to talk about our quick thumbs up, thumbs down. So let's begin with that, our synopsis from the voice of the cinema, Mr. Arthur Gordon, if you would, sir.
As a woman struggles to come to grips with her past in the wake of her mother's death, an unsettling presence emerges in her childhood home.
Bum, bum, bum. And hilarity ensues. They all get married. It's great. It's a wonderful tale. What?
That'd be a really funny ending for this movie.
Let's do what we always do. Let's give our quick thumbs up, thumbs down. Does this thing work or not work? I begin to my left, Mr. Dalton Stewart, if you would, sir.
Eh. Eh.
Really?
Eh. It's alright. I mean, that's literally it.
That's what you got.
I mean, this kind of feeds into our game a little bit, but yeah, it's perfectly fine. There's things about it I like. There's some really cool long tracking shots that I really enjoyed.
The run back into the house with the camera.
All of them. There's several.
Yeah.
There's quite a few. I thought they were all really good. However, Dustin and I talked a little bit about this off air. There is some serious issues in these long takes with male gaze, something that came up on last week's episode, particularly in the shooting and the costuming of this film, which is really nonsensical.
They know where they make their money.
Well, it's an IFC.
You never walked to the vending machine and you're very scantily...
No, I've never walked. It's cool. They're called boy shorts, Arthur. My point is, I like things about it. I like the central mystery quite a great deal. I thought the whodunit of why the house was haunted and figuring out who was haunting it and why they were haunting it, all really compelling stuff. I thought the dialogue was really, I don't know if it was the dialogue, it was in the writing or the delivery, but really very ten-eared. Especially the opening scene, the phone call. Yeah. That one, I was like, God, I hope this movie gets better, because I was in a bad mood at the start. and then the first scares, I was like, okay, I'm in. The first scare sequence in particular where Liz?
Nicole. Nicole was the first sister who...
The protagonist.
The protagonist is Annie.
Annie. The scene where she gets raffled about the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really cool.
When she has a wrestling match with a ghost.
Really cool. Really cool. But yeah, overall, just,
okay.
I didn't hate it.
Well, thank you, Dalton. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what say you?
You know, I have to say it's a 1.5 thumbs up for me. I lean towards a positive. I really, the second time I've seen it. The first time I enjoyed it. But
so you've seen this before?
Yeah.
Not as our assignment? Just
no,
like
yeah,
I've seen it before. When just kind of happened across
a year ago?
Yeah, when you first told me about it, yeah.
Okay.
He had mentioned it. I saw it on Netflix and it was just kind of interesting. I like that art of the face in the wall, I like that kind of thing. So.
It is a cool, kind of a cool cover. Okay. I was just, I want a little background on your experience with the film.
But I think it's well executed and it's effective in the way it builds tension. I think it's a very well-paced film. I think it does hook you pretty early on. I do agree. To me, there are a couple of pretty weak points here. I think direction and cinematography are strong.
Yeah.
I do think the performances, I think, are what hurt the dialogue. I think the performances are rough.
I think they're both.
The cast.
I think the performances would probably be improved by a stronger script.
Yeah.
And I think a stronger cast would have improved that script.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a twofold problem.
And so I think the story itself, though, at its core, the mystery and that whole, the way it's plotted, I think is very well done. But I don't... Also, I think there are some odd editing choices. There are a couple... When it cuts from one scene to the next, and it just feels odd or misplaced. And it's almost like when you write a paper, you know, you write a paragraph, whatever, you want your sentences that go together to be together. You don't want to say this, kind of jump to a different topic then come back. And it feels like there are a couple scenes that do that.
There's one in particular that I think of is she wakes up from the nightmare in the hotel room, which is a really cool sequence. Runs out to her motorcycle, again in her underpants, and the little girl comes out and says, "Hey!
You haven't ran to your motorcycle in your underpants
yet? No.
You need a helmet."
Neither barefoot nor in my underpants, and she says, "You need a helmet."
I know, I was like, she needs pants.
She needs pants and shoes, too. Also, some gloves wouldn't hurt.
I screamed, "She needs pants," at the screen.
Yeah, but then it immediately cuts to her in a diner going through her bag, so basically figuring out the mystery then and there.
Yeah.
Just a real, what?
Yeah.
You haven't ordered anything yet?
Yeah.
There's some odd editing choices, I think, for that.
But that made me think of that.
And also, I remember the first time I watched this, I don't remember liking the ending as much. The very, the Larry last little sequence. But here I wasn't as bothered by it, so I don't know why it was so bothersome the first time. But here I didn't mind as much. Other than that, though, I like it.
Very good, Arthur. Well, I'm going to say kind of the same sort of things Arthur did. One thing Dalton and I were saying when we were talking offline via text during the week was that this movie is... effective. It is standard. It is generic in the best sense of the term. It is of the horror movie genre. It takes you through the paces, and it does so effectively. It doesn't really miss a step. There are occasional storytelling places where you have to think for a moment, oh, okay, that's what's happening now, which may take you out.
Which, honestly, I prefer having to think over a being spoon-fed, so.
Yeah. And the other thing is that the budget really doesn't show outside of the cast, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the star that they brought in is Casper Van Dien. So, you know.
There's a lot of fun here with practical effects, I think.
Mm-hmm.
towards the end when one character meets their fate.
Mm-hmm.
But and that hall scene, that ghost scene, I think that
was really
very well done.
I really wonder how they did that. That was really impressive.
Yeah.
That's good. Good.
Yeah, I enjoy
invisible
that a lot.
Ropes, yeah. So I like that about it. I think it's effective. I think this when I think of this movie, I think of something you want to watch with somebody for the first time when you actually have a bunch of people together to watch a movie.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes you have a whole bunch of people together not to watch a movie, but you're going to put something on. Mm-hmm. It's a different sort of thing.
Which what movie did we say that would be good for a while back?
I don't remember now.
I think it was Gremlins.
Lockdown was one.
Maybe it was Lockdown. I think that's what
I think Gremlins
you used this
one
analogy
too.
Before.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think Lockdown might have been. This is a movie you want to watch.
Yeah,
when you're watching,
I'd say that's fair.
And it's a lot of fun, and everyone will have a good time, even non-genre fans of the horror genre. Now, specifically for a horror fan, this is probably a must-see.
I would
think so. I think every horror fan is going to have a lot of fun with this movie.
I think maybe
there's problems.
I think maybe for diehards who are having a hard time finding something they haven't seen before. Yeah, but I think those who were just kind of casually into horror like myself. Yeah, I mean, again, I don't dislike horror by any means. I'm not, you know, full throttle, balls to the wall, full speed or nothing about it. But, I mean, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I wouldn't say this is essential viewing unless you're like, gotta get that needle.
Yeah.
I've seen everything else. Find me something new. I'd agree with that. But, I mean, there's better things like this.
Right. Okay.
But I get what you're saying, though.
Yeah, and I think it's fun, and it's worth watching, and it's, you know... Dark Knight, bag of popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
This is evening well spent.
For sure.
All right.
I enjoyed it. It was a dark night when I watched it last night.
Yeah?
There you go.
So let's do what we do now. Let's do some analysis. Because even though this is so, in many ways, mediocre, and I mean mediocre in a really good way.
Yeah.
I
get what you're saying.
In a non-spectacular, but completely competent, completely technically there kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want our kind of reviews here to turn the dear listener away, because I do think this movie's worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
But this mediocre film means something, has several meanings and readings that you can give, and I think that's a lot of the fun of what we do here on the show. So let's do that. Mr. Arthur Gordon, I begin with you. To my right, sir.
Well, what I really want to talk about here is what makes this an effective horror film and why it kind of scares us or creeps us out. But first, I want to mention last week Dalton had mentioned Maniac being 40% Drive. Well, I would put The Pact about 70% Psycho.
Mm.
And the similarities aren't bad, and it doesn't detract
that
from
high?
The film, in my opinion. Unlike The House at the End of the Street, which came out a couple years ago with Jennifer Lawrence, which borrowed heavily from Psycho, and it was just fell flat. It was terrible, I thought. But here we get several things. Our focus begins on Nicole, a girl with a troubled past, who returns to her childhood home. And we slowly connect emotionally with this girl and her struggles. Now, we don't get as much time with her as we do with Marion in Psycho, but we do have enough time to get some knowledge about her past with drugs and that her sister doesn't think highly of her. She is then seemingly killed off-screen, and we're not really sure of her fate until the last act of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And this is followed by the introduction of, much like Psycho, the victim's sister, Annie, with whom she has a rocky relationship. And the next connection is the position that both sisters are put into. In Psycho, Lila has to join forces with Marion's boyfriend to figure out what happened to Marion.
Oh, right, right.
In The Pact, Annie is placed with her young niece while trying to figure out what happened to her sister. And the last and major nod to Psycho is the peephole.
Mm-hmm,
yet in
sure.
The Pact,
yeah.
We get a fun reversal as we follow the female protagonist as she watches the male antagonist through the peephole. Here, the prey spies on the hunter.
And I gotta say, that scene... every bit as scary as the basement scene in Silence of the Lambs.
Very tense.
Very
effective. That was very good.
Yeah.
I liked that quite a bit.
Man. So, I just proceed.
And one of the key elements of both Psycho and The Pact that make them very effective as horror films is this exploration of the fear of the known, as opposed to a fear of the unknown. For example, Alien takes us to outer space. The setting scares us because we don't know what could be in space. This is reinforced with the great tagline, in space, no one can hear you scream.
Mm-hmm.
It is an exploration of the fear of the unknown. However, The Pact
also
and Psycho...
also much running around in one's panties.
Yeah, there's that. Both explore the fear of the known. There is nothing out of the ordinary about either locale. The Bates Motel, especially in the 50s and 60s, violated a setting that many Americans who had traveled were familiar with, the roadside hotel. This was a common, everywhere kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And these hotels are typically very nondescript and quaint, but Hitchcock made both hotels and bathrooms terrifying places.
Specifically, hotel bathrooms.
Yeah. A combo. A deadly combo.
I got it. Buddy, I got it. Anytime I take a shower in a hotel or a motel, I make sure that damn door is locked.
You check.
Yeah.
No little old women running around. Or tall men.
Tall men dressed as old women.
Similarly, The Pact takes us to an everyday house in the middle of California. Nothing out of the ordinary eccentric is presented, like the house in The Conjuring or even the Overlook Hotel, which is very ominous in its... Mm-hmm. Appearance. The house has bad wallpaper and typical furnishings. We've all been in this house. Or we've seen houses like this. Your friends may have had one. My family had those similar kind of houses.
Yeah.
We know this location. That is where the horror seed is planted. Because from there, we can begin to overemphasize situations that we are familiar with and that we have encountered in the house that we grew up in. Early in the film, the first couple scenes, the lights flicker and the internet signal weakens. Something many of us have dealt with. But there's something more ominous at work within the house. Some other elements that reinforce the creepiness include the religious iconography. There are a lot of crosses and there are a lot of crucifixes around the house. And that also reinforces this kind of haunted house idea because those religious icons are always there for the reason. And these things build, and they build quite well. Nicole is Skyping with her daughter in the early moments of the film. The daughter asks, "Who's that behind you?" And we get one of our first jump scares as she turns and there's nothing there. But there's a darkened closet, which we probably all had run-ins with as kids the things in the dark under the bed or in the closet.
Typically my father. He was a cruel man.
Or Elijah Wood. One of the two.
Oh, man.
Of course, Nicole goes into the dark and we never see her again. Enter Annie, her sister. Once Annie is at the house, we get more of these slow burn features. There are more shadows. We literally have something go bump in the night. And she gets up and goes to the kitchen and finds the door open and
eating
stuff on
pickles
the floor.
And butter.
That's
your thing?
High calorie foods, bro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this, again, plays off a familiar sensation. We've stayed up at night and we've heard those noises, and sometimes they don't seem explainable. So it's really playing on these things that are everyday and very familiar to us.
Weird phone glitches. You open your phone, and it's set to something you don't remember having been doing.
Yeah.
That's weird.
But another thing I really liked is some of the most tense moments, they happen during the daytime.
Yeah.
And I really like that build. And even at night, the shots aren't overly dark. They're pretty well lit in the bedroom scene.
That was one of the, just to call to mind a very recent, very big film. That was something I found really enjoyable about Insidious, was its willingness to mess with you during the day.
Yeah.
Which is something, I mean, that's a lot of horror films, particularly haunted house movies, that's kind of your respite. You're like, okay, it's daytime, I'm good.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that about the tag, its willingness to be
keeps
like, yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. And I think that scene with Stevie the psychic, when she goes to that, that's a very, very hard-hitting
very
scene.
Very effective scene.
But I really think that's powerful for this. But lastly, for me, the film becomes a little more unsettling in the rewatch once you realize that the dangerous poltergeist is actually a flesh-and-blood human being.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something very horrifying once you realize that those shadows at the back of the frame and the things being dropped and open were by another person in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that amps up the terror of the situation, adds to the rewatchability
of the film.
That's something I really enjoyed thinking about after I'd watched it. I mean, because, you know, I don't want to completely write this film off. I know I was a little bit more mixed on it than you guys were, but I thought about it after it was over.
Yeah.
So that's saying something. I did think about the things in the film that take on a totally different light once you realize what was going on. And I enjoyed that.
Well, tell us what else you were thinking about this movie when you did that thinking.
I guess it's my turn. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the titular pact before I get too far into my analysis. Let's talk about the pact. Is the pact here, this pact between mother and friend that...
brother.
Mother and brother.
Well, hold on. Let me finish. Mother and murdered friend. That or is it between mother and brother?
I think it's between mother and brother.
You're referring to the murdered friend is the ghost.
Yes, the ghost. House.
Yeah. She didn't want you to see.
Fair enough.
You know, I would go with that.
Well, let's talk about the children's childhood. Are they kept in this closet not because their mother's abusive, but to keep them from their twisted uncle? I don't know. There's a thing I like about this film. There are a lot of unanswered questions about the mystery that you get to kind of play with in your head and think about the particulars.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed that. It was something I really enjoyed, and it kind of led me a lot to think about one of the things that I really keyed in on about this film is family secrets and how they don't go away, even if they tend to taint, especially when they remain uncovered. They have a tendency to take on a life of their own and becomes a family mystery of, you know, where grandma was for those 4 years, or whose dad is that? Who is he related to? These family mysteries that nobody talks about because we're white and puritanical, at least in my family, and we don't talk about that sort of thing. And that's the fun that I think this film has a lot of fun here with is this idea that in a family unit, you get to pretend that you're better than the others being people not in your family unit, and anything that attacks that fiction you built for yourself, you get to bury, quite literally in the case of a pact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she locked her brother in this room, but gave him an exit hatch? There are particulars of this I gotta think about, and it's still...
Well, he's gotta be hidden, right, so they didn't get caught.
Yeah.
So is this the exit through the closet? Was that what it was?
Yeah.
Exit through the closet.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well,
it was in case the police ever came, right? I mean, that's
well, why did he have a hatch into a secondary secret room? See, these are things that, if you think about them too long...
Well, I think the room is his room. I think the basement was bonus.
Was the basement his bonus? Or
yeah,
bonus
his bonus.
His bonus that he built.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, he cut the floorboard out.
Okay.
Did whatever he needed to do.
I'd say that's probably...
The room is what was given to him, I thought.
Okay. I'd say that's probably fair. The thing that I also thought about was, were the eye holes for Mom to keep an eye on him, or were they intentionally given to him to keep an eye on them?
Oh, I think they're his.
You think they're his?
Mm-hmm.
All clear.
So, hey, all clear, where can I go out?
These are things I thought about.
Maybe work both ways.
Exactly. These are things I thought about that could go either way.
Like the hotel people, it's all weird if you look through it backwards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These are just straight through.
Yeah. These are the things I thought about, though.
Sure.
I just thought they were fun aspects of the mystery that weren't totally spelled out, that were fun to mull over and kind of play with and break down. But anyway, back to my point. There is something here, I think, to be said for the nature of family secrets and the taint they have. And this is, you know, in terms of, we're speaking sociologically here, this is very micro level stuff. This isn't, but it reflects our behaviors on a macro level, I think. I mean, you look at any society, it likes to, America knows it was the most heinous, you know, apart from Brazil. And the Dutch, America knows it was one of the most heinous purveyors of slavery.
Right. You mean really Portugal, not Brazil?
No, Brazil. Brazil has like was the only place that had more slaves than us. I wasn't talking about the conditions. I was talking about the sheer magnitude.
I gotcha.
Last I checked, anyway, Brazil was the only country that had more or close to as much as us.
Goodness.
We like to forget about that. Germany knows they did the Holocaust. They don't really talk about it a whole lot, though. It's like, everybody knows that Uncle Todd diddled, you know, a couple of people, but we don't really talk about it at Thanksgiving.
Right.
And I think it was just an interesting, you know, a reflection of societal ills in a family dynamic. You kind of, you see the way we interact with each other on a small scale ripple outward into the rest of the world. And I think that's very interesting. Again, I'm bringing that to this film. I don't think the film's intentionally putting it here, but I think it's maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I think it's an interesting, I think when you look at family dynamics, it is an interesting reflection of the world at large. Is the filmmaker here trying to say something about that? Possibly just because, I mean, three of our five films for this Shocktober marathon have been about serial killers.
It's been interesting.
So, I mean, there is the chance that he maybe wanted to toy with the way we deal with the phenomenon of serial killers. The only other thing I want to touch on very briefly is the natures of mothers and daughters. I think this is very much a film about women.
Mm-hmm.
How deftly that's handled is up for debate. But I think this is very much about the, you know, the relationship that mothers and daughters have. And, you know, how that, again, as I talk about family secrets, how that relationship goes on to mold generations, I think. Like I said, there's a lot of interesting stuff here. One daughter became a junkie, but then got clean. One daughter bailed and never came back. And all these interesting things about, you know, how mothers affect their children. And again, fathers and sons, we talk a lot about that on the show. We don't talk about mothers and daughters quite as often. So we don't get as many films that give us the chance to talk about it, I should say. And I thought that was nice to have a film that gave us that opportunity. So that's what I've got for you this week, guys.
Outstanding, Dalton. Well, I want to talk about part of why it remains fun, because I've seen other horror movies that just do horror movie things, right?
Yeah.
He's in the closet. Oh, you know, don't go up the stairs. Oh, and you're waiting for it. You kind of predict every move, and we don't really have that sort of predictive sort of horror movie formula.
Yeah.
Working. The scares, the shots themselves, the things they do are things that have been done before. But the ordering and the kind of narrative structure of it, Arthur talked a bit about Psycho as a narrative touchstone for the movie. I want to talk about literary genre. I want to talk about Gothic literature.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about Gothic literature, especially in the United States, is, of course, European Gothic literature is very easy, right? We have Dracula and his castle. We have crazy aristocracy and all of those sorts of things.
Victor Frankenstein and his machinations.
Well, even Jane Eyre growing up in this abuse and trying to find, you know.
Gosh, good call.
You know, I mean.
Yeah, nice.
But, all these sort of Gothic, you know, sorts of themes. And what I want to say is that this movie is full of, this is a Gothic film. And that's why it's fun. Is it connects someplace, perhaps subconsciously, perhaps unconsciously, with other kinds of stories. It's all geared around a home, right? This is an estate, and it's been inherited. I'm going to the ancient home of my ancestors, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just mom's place, but it is exactly that. And there is a secret building. I mean, how many Gothic tales have some crazy aunt up in the attic, or some crazy uncle down the basement,
or something somebody left behind? A mystery to be solved in your new inherited abode.
Precisely. And so you have the hidden uncle inside this, and he's a crazy person. He's a serial killer. Not only do you have that, you have the sort of tension that always works in Gothic lit between science and reason and the irrational slash supernatural. Mm-hmm. This movie doesn't let you pick, oh, wait, it's all going to be fine because it's actually real flesh and blood. Dude, there's still a ghost. Yeah. It's not just a ghost story either.
It's also serial. And that's the thing. This is a little genre mashup or a subgenre mashup that was kind of happening here. It was kind of fun.
But in Gothic Lit, it's the rule of the day.
Yeah.
You have exactly that. You have Jane Eyre's story being totally a realistic tale, but then there's a supernatural moment when you realize that her man, that Mr. Rothschild, whatever his name is, Rochester's his name, that he needs her. And so he just goes because she somehow hears his voice. Mm-hmm. The same thing could be found in Nathaniel Hawthorne tales. You know, we could go on and on as far as American Gothic goes. That's
thinking about how the backbone of the plot of Dracula involves a lot of real estate being moved.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. That's the thing I like to think about a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the bulk of... Guys, have you read Dracula or like seen a faithful adaptation? Let me remind you of something. The backbone of that entire piece of work's plot is about real estate.
Totally.
That's freaking awesome.
And there happens to also be a vampire. This is a similar sort of thing. It's about inheritance and those sorts of things.
Coming back home.
A serial killer and a ghost. And it plays with those tensions. Also, there is the presence of a major Gothic trope, which is incest. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's crucial. I mean, again, spoilers ahoy. Annie's actually her uncle's daughter. Creepy. And
yeah, okay, I got that too. I wasn't sure if we all...
The blue and the green eyes and the freckles.
I assume that was the implication. That's what I took from
it. Yeah, that actor's not a freckled man. They freckled him for the movie. Gotcha. So,
that guy's old dude ripped.
Yeah, he is.
He's kind of awesome.
But yeah, he is.
He's got a very unique... The posture he brings to that film is very unique, and I really appreciate that.
It's a good performance from him.
Yeah, it really is. Well, it's not a lot, but what he gets to do is really interesting.
And so all this gothicism is at work here. It is every bit an Edgar Allan Poe story. It is every bit a Nathaniel Hawthorne novel. And that is part of why I think it's kind of brilliant, even though there's not a whole lot. Now, what's great about commentary is that these stories are always trying to reveal that which is hidden. Mm-hmm. That's what Gothic Tale is always about. Edgar Allan Poe's Black Cat is not about a black cat. It's about the master of a black slave who abuses black slaves, and it's about that sort of idea. This movie is about how we as a country are hiding our violence. We're trying to set it aside and trying to pretend like it's not there, but it keeps eking out and attacking us. Dalton's got a grin.
It's always fun when our analysis syncs up.
and that is the big thing that's going on, and that's the big secret that's being revealed, is this really American history of violence. And that is what Gothic literature is always trying to do. And you know, it's moving it to America, so it's all contextual. It's all 21st century. You know, what's great about the Gothic is that it's so old school, but it's also so very new school. So they integrate the iPhone and the Google Street View and that sort of thing for the sleuthing. And yet there's still this other side of it where...
Yeah, and it's something Faulkner and his contemporaries did with Southern Gothic. I mean, they... Granted, it was still, by today's standards, old school, but for them it was very much... new school to what had been done before. So
you have this old school thing, but you also have tradition that's very important. We have the religious iconography that Arthur referred to. Obviously, we have the Ouija board drawing on the floor.
That was Stevie, a cool scene.
Creepy scene. And finally, just there's a last aesthetic cue that what we're doing here is Gothic. If we're thinking Gothic and directors, what's one director that comes to mind, gentlemen?
Tim Burton,
right? There's a Gothic aesthetic. Did you notice that Stevie looks like the Corpse Bride?
She does.
Huh.
And did you notice that when she's on the phone, she wears one of the great aesthetic ketones in all of Tim Burton and really kind of this pop surrealist gothic influenced art movement, which is the vertical or the horizontal stripes. She's got the horizontal stripes on her shirt. So does the niece in her jammies.
I just noticed, hey, that girl's on a couple episodes of Weeds.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, good, yeah.
Funny. So all that gothicism is being placed there, I think, quite intentionally. Okay. And perhaps this is the secret that is being revealed as our violence as a culture. And that's what I bring to the table today.
So you're taking, let's take a moment to break down the mystery since we've all wrapped up our analysis. Let's talk about it a little bit. So your feeling, this was my feeling, was part of the pact was that she was going to take care of her brother's daughter.
Well, her incestuous daughter, that the brother knocked up mama.
Really? Yeah. That's your feeling?
That's what I thought. I thought it was incest.
Oh, I'd say that's probably... Okay, I didn't pick that up. I'd say it's probably definitely a valid reading. Did not pick that up. I'd say, looking back, yeah, that's actually probably what happened.
So wasn't the murdered friend pregnant? in the picture?
No, the mama was pregnant.
Oh, was the mom pregnant?
Mm-hmm. I actually thought the murdered friend looked pregnant, too. And I couldn't decide. Every time they looked at that picture, I was kind of, and really couldn't tell. The mom was pregnant in the picture, though.
So. I'm believing the two-tone eyes is
well, he's definitely
that's his. That's her father.
Okay, yeah. And you think her mother is still her mother?
I think so.
And that explains why she's having dreams about this man.
Birth certificate
well,
and whatnot. Things she probably seen growing up, too, that she yeah. had remembered.
Okay.
And I would say this, the last scene of the film, I did not like it at all the first time I watched it.
I still don't like it.
Upon second viewing, I realize now it's a dream. She's in bed dreaming of that house, and she remains haunted.
That's
the point.
Can I pop that bubble?
Yeah, go ahead. Do something else.
Well, I was on IMDb today to look up facts, mm-hmm. and the Pack 2 has been announced for 2014.
Oh, man.
So there may be some tie in there.
Yeah, there may be. I don't know.
But I don't know. Well, I like the dream theory works.
She is her baby dad. I mean,
and it would explain because, I mean, the guy did take a lead aspirin to the head.
I think he's dead.
But
she could be crazy because, you know, I mean, blood will tell. That's another gothic trope.
Yeah.
I assume the implication was that now he was a ghost, which I thought was really stupid.
Mm.
And I think if I had to, you know, be a studio exec and greenlight a sequel to this film, that would be my log line for the sequel. Well, hey, kid, wouldn't it be interesting if now he was the ghost in the house? That's how I would talk if I was a studio executive.
Is that how you talk?
Yeah. Well, that being said, this was an indie film released by IFC Pictures, so if a sequel's getting made, it's probably because the director wants to.
Yeah. Is the director attached? I did see the Pack 2 thing. I'm not sure it is the same director.
I don't think so. But
all right, well, let's talk about some more stuff.
Let's do some more stuff. But let's first do this. Shelf or trash, else or instead. I begin with you, Arthur Gordon, sir.
You know what? The more I think about it, the more times I watch it. This is definitely a film I would revisit again and again. And I think I would put it on the shelf. I like it a lot, especially on subsequent viewing. And I think there's a lot of fun there to unravel as you keep watching it. And I think we've kind of explored that here tonight. But the other thing, Else or instead, else, I think you watch American Horror Story 2 Asylum. I think there are some things there that tie in a lot with a couple story arcs mm-hmm. that go on with some characters.
Yeah.
But the other thing, and this is just completely based off cover arts, you watch The Frighteners. Jay Fox, Gina Bride.
That's fair.
You know what? You watch this, you can watch Asylum, get creeped out, and you can have some fun with The Frighteners.
Nice.
So those are my picks, I think.
Excellent. I like those picks. Mr. Dullster, shelf or trash, else or instead?
No. Neither. I'm going to do neither again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I came close to trash. I don't like this. I know I had a mixed reaction to Maniac last week. I actually like Maniac quite a bit more than I like this film. I think the more I think about Maniac, the more I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I actually probably, I'm going to go ahead and retroactively put that on the shelf.
Okay.
I know I said stream it last week. I'm going to retroactively put Maniac on the shelf. I think the more I think about that film...
Retroactive!
Thank you. We're going to retcon last week's episode. The more I think about it, the more I like it. And I say that to say this about The Pact. I think the more I think about The Pact, the less I'm going to like it.
Yeah?
Yeah. I liked things about it. I liked the mystery. I liked the kind of the genre, subgenre dialogue going on. I liked some of the analysis that I was able to milk out of it, some of the things I took from it. But I think as a whole, I think it probably shows a lot of promise from the filmmaker. But I do like things. I liked it more than The Innkeepers.
Yeah, I like it more than that. Definitely. For sure.
Stream it. Else, or instead, so whichever, I guess either or in this case. I'm going to go ahead and take a weird pick again. I did it last week. I'm going to go out of my way to pick something that you wouldn't think of off right off the top of your head. And I'm going to say the Netflix original series Orange is the New Black.
Mm.
Because it's another series. It's something else that deals a lot with women. And it deals with the secrets we keep from each other. The secrets we try to bury as a society. Fun fact. The state...
Whoa.
Gimli agrees with what I'm about to say. The state we live in, Oklahoma, incarcerates more women per capita than anywhere.
Anywhere.
That's entire nations.
Crazy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So... fun times. And again, that's what I like about Orange is the New Black, and that's, you know, kind of ties in my analysis of The Pact, is these secrets we bury from ourselves and these secrets we bury as a society. So.
Excellent.
And also it deals very much with women, and as I might have said when I first talked about the show on a previous episode of the podcast, Orange is the New Black is the best series to deal with women's issues, I think, in a long time, possibly ever.
Wow. High praise indeed. Well, I'm going to probably go ahead and say shelf, but I'm going to shelf it with a caveat.
Okay.
It's currently streaming on Netflix because I really just want you to see it.
Yeah.
But I don't think you ought to go on Amazon, try to find a copy, have it shipped to your home or anything like that. This is one of those things, you find it in a dollar bin, which you probably would.
Yeah.
You buy it then. I mean, this is not something I'd want you to put a whole lot of coin on, but I think it needs to be seen.
Yeah.
And so that...
You were very adamant that we watch this.
Yeah, I mean, I really like this movie.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
And I like what it is as far as low budget. I like what it is as far as being generic, you know, and genre being part of what we're doing here in this show that we do. So I thought it really kind of was all up in where we were, but it was one of those things where criticism... Part of what we do as critics is not just to talk about what everybody's talking about so you have an idea, is that we're also talking about things that you haven't seen to give you ideas, things that we want to put forward. And this is a movie I want more people to see, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay.
And so that's what I would say about that. What else
should you watch? I'm not angry you made me watch it.
That's good. Your friendship means too much to me. So, what I would say is this, another gothic film that moves out of the traditional gothic trappings and settings, this time not the subdivision, but it's the suburbs of California in the 1940s. You ought to watch Alfred Hitchcock's Shadow of a Doubt, where there is a uncle who shows up, and he is a little Count Dracula, but no supernatural, and it's very, very interesting. And so I would say, you must see Shadow of a Doubt. And that's what I would
say. This is the film... By Dustin's estimation, the much underseen Stoker was pretty loosely based on.
Yeah, there's a lot of this in Stoker.
Stoker this year or last year?
Earlier this year, which I loved.
Springish, it was in the spring.
Mm-hmm. I remembered you liked Stoker a lot, so I figured since you mentioned Shadow of a Doubt, I'd mention that as well.
Absolutely. In fact, watch it too. That's a long day, but you should do it. Sir, go.
Well, before we move on to our regularly scheduled next segment, I wanted to spring a couple of games on you guys.
Oh.
I kind of thought of them about tonight. The first one is, we should rate our Shocktober movies, you know, what you
like
from the bottom, top to bottom, what you like.
The
other one, though, and this kind of comes up off of the Wes Anderson sketch from Saturday Night Live, what is a director you'd like to see play in the horror genre?
Oh, okay.
That you wouldn't normally think of, connected to that dot.
Okay. So we'll do the first with the rankings, right?
Okay. I'll go first.
Since you've been thinking about it, you go.
I'm going to put Zodiac at the top.
Okay.
For me, Zodiac. I'll put The Pack next, Pawnee Pool third, Maniac at four, and then I would put
Innkeepers
at five. That would be my ranking.
Okay. I like those rankings. Dalton.
Zodiac, Pawnee Pool, Maniac, Innkeeper, shit. Give me a second. I had them ready to go, and then I spoke too fast. Zodiac, Pawnee Pool, Maniac, The Pack, Innkeepers.
Okay. I'm going to put Zodiac in the middle, and that's just because it's less of a horror movie for me.
Yeah.
But I would probably put Pontypool number one. Mm-hmm. I would put The Pack next. Then I would put Zodiac. Then finally, we would have The Innkeepers. No, wait, what am I missing?
Maniac,
and then The Innkeepers.
Mm-hmm. I only put Zodiac at the top because, as a horror movie, definitely it's. And again, I've been through a little bit to get it in here.
No.
I think as a straight horror film, we kick that out totally. Yeah. But just in terms of filmmaking, I love that film.
And I would say this as far as my top four is that my top four are very close. I mean, I really enjoyed those top four movies.
I love Pontypool.
I did too.
I love it. I'm so glad that we watched it. And again, like I said, the more I think about Maniac, the more I really enjoy it. I guess it's time for the other game.
Yeah, we had a solid month. So let's talk about directors that we'd like to see play around in the horror genre.
Arthur, you already thought about this.
So you get to go first.
I'd like to see something from Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
Something, a solid horror. I think there's shades of that in Memento and Insomnia. There's that thriller.
There's definitely shades of it in Following.
And so I think you could do something really fun with the horror genre. I was thinking earlier, though, Ron Howard. Just throw him in there.
Okay.
Completely out of left field, Ron Howard.
I like that.
See what he can do.
Okay. I like that. Mr. Dalton Stewart.
Oh, me? Crap. I hope you were going to go first. I'm going to say Sidney Lumet. I know he's dead.
Okay.
But I like him as a filmmaker. I haven't seen all of his films, but I like the ones I've seen. Really specifically thinking of his last feature film, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. I really like that movie, and it's kind of a really horrific film. And I think that would be interesting. Also, the Coen brothers. I think they've dipped their toe in horror a bit.
Yeah.
And I think it would be fun to see them just take that plunge.
Yeah.
I like that.
Dustin. I stalled for you.
I appreciate that. You know, I mean, if Wes Craven would stop making musicals and make horror films, it'd be great, wouldn't it? Just kidding. What I would probably recommend, although he has technically made one, I want to say Martin Scorsese, being that Goodfellas is a monster movie.
Okay.
And I would like to see Mr.
It's
Scorsese.
Also torture porn.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And so I think I'd like to see Scorsese make us a full-out, real-deal horror movie. There are shades of that in, of course, Goodfellas, because, again, Joe Pesci is a monster. Yep. There are shades of that in Shutter Island. But, I mean...
I think Shutter Island's darn close to a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yeah. Very much, I think that would work with our real-life horror
mm-hmm.
to some extent.
Kind of a thriller.
The Dachau, Liberation Reprisals, and The Nature of Insanity. Yeah. Some heavy stuff in that movie, man.
Yeah,
it's a good
is.
Movie.
Yeah, it is.
It's a good movie. That's a really underrated one for him, I think.
It's fun.
Well, thank you, Arthur, for that particular game.
Yeah, that was a blast, man.
Let's play our last game, our pre-discussed off-air
game.
Well, we should probably talk about feedback first, though, right?
Oh, you know, we should talk about feedback. And we should probably get some feedback on the things that we just said. How would you rank, dear listener, the films that we've seen for Shocktober?
How would you rank this marathon?
Yeah. How would you rank our performance? No, we don't want to know. How would you also like to see a different director who's not been working much in the horror genre take a stab at it? Quite literally, perhaps.
Never again.
Never again. Not without incident. So, there is an opportunity for you to do that on Facebook, which has been quite active. Where is that located, Arthur?
You can find us at facebook.com/goodtrashgenrecast.
And do share what the dear listeners
have
to say.
Well, I'll do the minor one first. I asked last week, there was a little heated round and round about whether The Thing was one of the greatest horror movies ever made.
I did get pissed.
So I asked, you know, for the dear listener to chime in, but... No one really did. Brigham Cole said, it's not the greatest of all time, but I'd say one of the greatest of the modern era.
I'm just saying, if I were to teach a class about film, and we're gonna cover horror, that's on there.
Wow.
Especially in terms of of Cold War paranoia. That shit's in there, baby.
Not Dalton, said, I think Dustin was right.
That might have been me.
Andrew McDonald said, the greatest horror movie ever made is The Faculty.
I love you, Andrew.
I don't know why we're arguing. But Brigham Cole came to Dustin's defense and said, horror for all of the wrong reasons.
Thank you, Brigham.
So,
no Brigham, you don't like The Faculty? How have we never talked about this?
We've never really, nobody really bit on that, but you know what? They all put their energy into the other question.
That was fine.
About horror remakes.
Yeah.
So Randall Bay started us off. He said, I enjoy both original and remakes of The House on Haunted Hill.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I despise the Wolfman remake. Duly noted. Benicio del Toro.
I've never really heard a lot about that.
Had nothing on launching. It was a terrible film. I think it all just went to crap in production.
Really?
There's a lot of stuff.
I know there was a lot of behind the scenes drama.
Yeah. But Nick Sanford then chimes in. He says, I actually just watched The Ring with Dalton. And I'd have to say that's my favorite horror remake. I despise the original Japanese version. Maybe I'm a racist. Also interesting.
Probably true.
The Ring is the highest grossing horror remake ever. And he goes on to talk, the American remake is more about a mother being confronted with her parenting abilities than it is about spooky ghost mythology. And that stuff is just icing on the cake. But it's about a character in her arc, and that's why I think it's more interesting and scarier. Nick, I don't think I could agree more with you.
Arthur, you did talk on that episode about your enjoyment of... Gore Verbinski's version over the original review.
Yeah, I think Nick's really hitting it on the head. And for me, and I kind of comment on the thing here as well, to me there's just something lacking in the Japanese. There's very just dry and energyless, it seems. There's just nothing really, I don't know. I couldn't palate it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But then Nick went back and chimed in on the Wolfman. He said, I think everyone loathed the Wolfman remake. That's what happens when you let a hired gun touch a valuable property and then halfway through production decide you don't want him to direct it.
Who was it, Joe Johnson?
That is who's credited. So I don't know if he finished it or someone else.
I think he finished it.
But I know like Danny Elfman was attached to score,
uh-huh.
and then
they fired
he
him.
Left, and he got the credit. But yeah, it's not his.
It's a whole.
There's a lot of
yeah, Joe Johnson. And when it comes to he really can, you know, he's in terms of forgot how to talk. As far as journeyman filmmakers go, you know, not auteurs, but like really just craftsmen. Like I mean,
auteur en scène. If you
I like
for the French,
or you know,
or journeyman,
because I'm an American lumberjack filmmakers, just real like men doing.
Men.
I'm not an artist.
That's what mature means.
I'm not an artist. But damn it, I'm gonna make something.
Immature, I'll say.
But yeah, I think I like a lot of Joe Johnson movies. Actually,
I love The Rocketeer. with all my
heart. That's a good flick.
I love Captain America. You know what? Here we are.
You know what I also like? Hidalgo. Not a bad movie.
I like Hidalgo.
But yeah, I never saw
it. You know what's at the bottom of that totem, though? Jurassic Park 3. We'll just leave that at the bottom.
I wasn't going to talk about it. But anyway, so Nick goes on to...
But he pretty much just kind of reinforces why people hated
the movie. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Shane Arrington chimed in. He said, good remakes. The Ring. Let Me In.
I love Let Me In. Cape Fear. Oh, my God.
The Fly.
Yes.
The Thing. And yes. Dawn of the Dead. And he says, bad is the Evil Dead. The Thing from 2012. And I'm assuming Rob Zombie's Halloween. And then Brigham Cole comes in. He says, I don't think that Evil Dead was a bad remake. I see it in the terms of the fandom around the original Sam Raimi films has been around long enough that, much like the Star Wars originalists have gotten set in their ways. Mm. So when a new entry into the canon or a story set in the universe doesn't live up to their expectations, they throw a, quote, shit fit. And then on a personal note, he says, here are a few of my favorite remakes. The 2010 remake of The Crazies, George Romero's film. A Fistful of Dollars, which is technically a remake of Kurosawa's Yojimbo.
Yep.
I praise you for that shout-out.
He says the Fright Night remake, and
You know, I meant to mention that last week. I love both of those movies.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call the remake an improvement upon the original.
No.
By any means. But, man, I like both of those movies a lot.
I thought Fright Night was a lot of fun, and it's one of those movies, it's one where you see Colin Farrell just having a lot of fun in the role, and I think I really enjoyed that one. He goes on with Little Shop of Horrors, Scarface, and The Thing, the Carpenter one.
Yeah.
And then Shane Arrington comes back to...
address the issues with Evil Dead.
Yes, and he says, while I don't entirely disagree with Brigham about fans of Evil Dead, just for him, the movie wasn't very good. Remake.
And that's fair. I liked it.
Yeah.
I know, Dustin...
I hadn't seen the originals, had no expectation, I enjoyed it.
I liked it a lot. I've seen it twice now. I liked it a lot more the second time. The new Evil Dead. Yeah, I've seen the original Evil Dead's a lot.
Yes, because they're amazing.
They are awesome. Yeah, let's move on, because I'm going to talk about how Evil Dead 2 is way superior to Evil Dead 1, if we keep going. So,
okay.
And that's my conversation we need to have.
And that's it from the Facebook.
That's, cool.
That's a lot from the Facebook.
That's a fun conversation.
I'm really glad to see, listeners, I'm proud of you. Glad to see you getting engaged with one another.
It's also nice to see new people commenting.
Yeah.
Like Andrew, I think it was...
Andrew and Nick, Nick doesn't comment very often.
Doesn't.
Good
to see him weigh in.
Randall Blaze?
Baze.
Blaze? I don't know. I'm going to call him Blaze, like an American gladiator.
Is it Blade? Is it Laser?
This is Blazer. Blazer. we have fun. We'll be right back.
Oh, you guys.
And we're back.
We have another means of social media that are available to you. And Dalton will tell us about that. In character.
It was 1971. San Bernardino, California.
You know, she was your mother too, Arthur. The least you can do is come to her house, tweet at her funeral.
Do you remember what she did to us?
She tweeted a lot, Arthur.
She did not tag me, ever.
Oh,
her mother was a rampant hashtagger. Those people have 30 hashtags for one tweet. Ladies and gentlemen, you can find us on the Twitter at good_trash.
Anything you want to share on feedback from the Twitter?
Yeah, we got a couple of things from Brad Epperson. He's got some questions. He's plugged us.
Pressure's on.
With some questions.
There's a question.
He's got two.
Okay.
He said he just finished the Buffy episode. He wants to know why no comment on Nathan Fillion as Caleb McCreepy. Priest. Hashtag Joss Whedon universe. Hashtag Buffy good. Hashtag good podcast. That's what we're talking about.
You're just like that bad mother, Brad.
Watch it, Brad. honestly, it's because that doesn't happen until the very end of season 7.
It wasn't even in my mind. I mean, I love Nathan Fillion on the show, but he doesn't show up for 7 seasons.
I only got to season 2.
We were really kind of focused on season 2, because that's as far as any of us got.
Yeah, so.
He also wants to know, why Axel F? No objection, just curious. Arthur picked it, but to my mind, it's probably because I think it's a really great...
What is it?
Axel F.
Axel Foley. Music.
That's the name of the theme song. Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh.
It's Axel F.
Okay.
Brad, I would say probably two reasons. One, it really kind of exemplifies good trash themes. It's a great good trash theme song. It is a very... that's what I'm looking for. Not influential.
Iconic.
Thank you. Knew it was an I word. It's a very iconic theme to a very iconic good trash film. Secondly, it's catchy.
Yeah.
Yes.
And thirdly, that was the episode we used to talk about theme songs.
So there you go.
And it was, I mean, it just has a really good beat and rhythm that you can put in those quotes over it. And it kind of reinforces the quotes when you listen to the song under it and how it kicks in and stuff.
Sure enough.
It works musically and thematically. Maybe we'll change it up someday. Maybe we won't.
Maybe we change it for Halloween. Maybe.
Maybe kiss my black ass. Maybe we'll ask so many questions.
When we get to season three, maybe we'll find another
Hey, you know, speaking of things that are iconic, you know what the pact isn't?
Iconic?
Iconic, you know, but it's great.
This is a good segue.
It's a lot of fun. And so what we're going to talk about right now...
Did you get a degree in segues? Because you should have.
What we're going to do is we're going to talk about non-iconic, non-groundbreaking, but absolutely effective, lots of fun. You should be on the couch with your girlfriend or your boyfriend, or your girlfriend and your boyfriend, and watch this film with... I don't know.
No, that was really inclusive.
It's not my business.
No, that was very inclusive, and I appreciate it.
But whomever you watch, or just your friend, you can just be friends and watch a scary movie. But these are effective horror films, but they're not. Again, they're not going to be the things that we're talking about. They're not going to be things that are going to find their way into a film studies course. They're going to be just good movies that are a lot of fun. They're quite effective. Now, this does not mean, I think, we need to say this. Because we may name a film that's been referenced because it's influential in the life of a particular director because he saw it.
Yeah.
But it's not like the overall pervasive sort of movie.
Yeah.
So what we're not talking
about. For instance,
about,
the director of a film that was mentioned on, that I'm going to mention a little bit in the commentary for his film mentions a film called The Devil Times Five. You've never heard of that film. But he saw it and there's something about it that stuck with him.
Nor would you say the original Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, recently remade by Guillermo del Toro. Mm-hmm. You may have heard of the del Toro film, but you did not see the made-for-TV movie, likely. Some people did, and everyone who did see it liked it. But it's not that movie.
Yeah.
It's not Friday the 13th.
It's not Halloween.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Or The Shining.
Yeah. That's what
or
we're talking about.
Or Poltergeist, or The Exorcist, or any other myriad horror film that has gone on to... scared the bejesus out of children for decades.
So we're talking about that. Now, we're not saying necessarily no sequelization.
This is that film that your granddad says, oh, you should have seen Rodan. That was a good one.
But effective, a lot of fun.
By the way, Rodan is a badass movie.
It's a good movie. So that's what we're talking about. And we're doing it in the horror genre. I begin to my right, Mr. Arthur Gordon, if you would, sir.
I've got three picks here, and two of them are kind of tied. And
wow.
Put together for similar reasons. The first that I want to talk about is The Others. Nicole Kidman, early 2000s, I believe.
I love that movie.
I think it's just a very effective, similar to The Pact. It's just that very, it's kind of a slow build, and the jump scares kind of build. And it's just a very effective. It also has some children in it. Children are always creepy. It also has a little old lady in it. Old people are creepy.
What?
That's why I'm very scared to come to this podcast every week, because I just don't know what'll happen with our...
See, that's why...
Because my wife's such an old lady.
I'm talking about you.
I thought you were talking about his children.
Well, both. It's a family. It's a creepy family. He is in a sweater vest. You know, it just has some well-placed jump scares. I think it's just very well-designed, well-built, and tensions mount and proceeds very well. But the other two, and I kind of lumped them together. The first is 30 Days of Night. The vampire film starring George Hardin, based on the graphic novel comic
good
book
pick.
Series.
Good pick.
And I've paired this with Funny Games, which I've mentioned probably about five times this month.
He likes it.
It's gonna have to go in your penalty box, man.
Is the Hanukkah rule.
The Hanukkah rule.
The Hanukkah rule's in effect.
The Hanukkah rule.
But both movies are horrifying and disturbed. More horrifying and disturbed. Sorry. I apologize. I'm gonna get there. Both movies are more horrifying and disturbing than scary.
Yeah.
And it's because they refuse to pull punches in regards to which characters they may torture or who they choose to kill or let live. And so to me, I think they're just very, very effective. I don't think they're super influential, but I think they're a lot of fun. Well, not necessarily fun, but they are very effective and good to watch. So.
Excellent. I like those picks. Mr. Dalton Stewart, you're non-iconic, but very effective, lots of fun, scary movies.
Yeah, I really tried to think of an older pick, and for some reason, nothing really came to mind. I really keyed in on a lot of recent films. One that Brigham mentioned on the Facebook, and that is the remake of George Romero's The Crazies, with Timothy Oliphant and a bunch of other actors you recognize from other things. I really like that movie a lot, and I didn't mention it last week because I haven't seen the original Crazies. It's the only Romero film I haven't seen. So I couldn't speak to its quality. And I just really like it. It's almost more of an action movie than a horror film. But no one acts like an idiot. I think everyone acts logically in that film.
Which helps.
Which helps. And there's things about it that it takes... The thing that works about the crazies is it takes the terror of the mob that you get inherent in a zombie film, but it also has these little mini slasher film set pieces. And they encounter one of the crazies just by themselves, not a group of them. Mm-hmm. And there are these slasher film-esque, hunter versus hunted sequences that are really interesting to watch. I also thought of the Hills Have Eyes remake. I've seen bits and pieces. Also, the reason this didn't come up on last week's episode, I've seen bits and pieces of the Hills Have Eyes, the original, which is obviously very influential. Right. I don't really remember it, though. I saw the remake recently. I just kind of happened to stumble across it. I never had any intention to see this film. And I ended up watching the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, it's really good.
Yeah, it's intense.
There are things about it that just really work. And again, I don't like neutered protagonists. I think that's a thing that I really key on in a horror film, is when the protagonist says, no, and picks up a weapon and fights back. It's something I really liked about the film You're Next. I don't like this idea that if we're all encountered with lethal violence, we're going to just die. Yeah. I like to think we'll at least go down swinging. I don't have that much faith in us as people. Another film that I just thought of because Arthur said 30 Days a Night is John Carpenter's Vampires, which is a film nobody remembers, starring the amazing, the wonderful James Woods.
I like James Woods.
Oh, he's so awesome. He's the best, and he's just a badass in this movie, and nobody's going to remember this movie because it's not that great, but it's just cool. Mm-hmm. And I think the last 10 years have been really bad for vampires because vampires are great white sharks.
Well, they got neutered as well.
Yeah. And that's the thing I like about 30 Days a Night. It came out in the wake of Twilight.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, this is what they actually are. They suck. Mm-hmm. They're assholes. Mm-hmm. And you should kill them.
Yeah.
With extreme prejudice. And that's what this film is about. A loosely sanctioned paramilitary group that works indirectly with the Catholic Church that goes around fighting vampires. It's badass. You should watch it. It's really cool. Also, one of the Baldwin brothers is in it, so that's cool.
And it's a Western.
It is. It is. Much like Catherine Bigelow's vampire Western, After Dark or Near Dark, I forget. I've never seen it, but I've heard good things. Last but not least is a film from last year that I raved about on the show, which was Sinister, which is the filmmaker of that in his commentary for it referenced that film, The Devil in Times Five.
Mm-hmm.
I just really like that movie. It plays with a lot of tropes that we've come to expect from horror from the aughts and into the 2010s. It plays with found footage. It plays with torture porn. It plays with ghost movies. It kind of binds these all together into one mystery, and you get to really kind of see a deconstruction, I think, of what's scary. And I really like that movie.
Yeah.
I think it's not going to change the world, but I think it's underseen, and I really liked Ethan Hawke's performance, and I like the structure of that film quite a bit. So those are my picks. Dustin.
I like those picks. I'm going to say one from this year, and we kind of used this as a reference point earlier on mm-hmm. when we were talking about it, but The Conjuring is exactly this kind of movie. There is nothing you've never seen before in The Conjuring, but it is very effective. It's very scary. You will crawl up in your chair, and you'll have a good time while watching it.
Yeah.
And so I totally recommend it. Another movie I recommend quite a lot is a Guillermo del Toro produced film directed by Jay Bayona called The Orphanage,
mm-hmm.
which, again, not this anything really all that new. It's kind of a scary little ghost story in a house, pretty standard in that way, but loads and loads of fun. And finally, you get another Guillermo del Toro feature with monsters in the sewers, and yeah, they're cockroaches. Mimic is fun. People hate on Mimic.
That's one of my blind spots for him. So
Mimic is fun, and it's a good movie. I mean, I have a good time watching it. There are things, obviously, there's some studio intervention. It's why it's not great. It's mm-hmm. why it's not as iconic as it could be. But it's a good time. And
also because nobody's as afraid of cockroaches as Guillermo del Toro.
This is probably true.
The man does not like bugs.
Bugs are terrifying creatures of evolution to him. So, there you go. There are our picks. What are your picks, dear listener? Do tell us.
It is a complicated game. You got to really twist your noodle on this one.
And think about, these are not iconic. They're not the game
changers.
No one
will remember these in 50 years.
Right.
No one will remember there were remakes to The Crazies and The Hills Have Eyes in 50 years.
Yeah, it won't be a big deal then. But it'll be a lot of fun if you sit down and watch it. Do tell us, give us a recommendation.
Be that weird grandpa that's telling their kids what old movies they should watch.
That, we need to see more movies. Always.
Always.
Yeah.
Love to hear your picks for horror films that, probably aren't on anybody's radar.
All right. Well, let's play our last thing that we always do. Let's talk about what's got us fired up in pop culture, and we'll call it a show. I begin to my left, Mr. Dalton Stewart. Are you fired up?
Yeah, actually, quite a bit. earlier this year, the Oklahoma Museum of Art did what they always do. They have a partnership with the Oklahoma Film Preservation Society. Every year they show a marathon of films on 35mm. I was fortunate enough to go and catch Frankenstein on 35mm this weekend. I watched The Bride of Frankenstein with Nick Sanford. Man.
That's a better movie than the first
one.
Yeah,
that's a great movie. It takes a little bit to get going. There's some weird satirical humor that I think falls flat, doesn't quite translate 80 years later. But holy crap, the second half of that film is really something special.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really blew my hair back. Man.
It's a good movie.
Also, really excited about a comedy special that just went up on Netflix. It's Mark Maron's Thinky Pain. I haven't got a chance to watch it yet. It's 1.5 hours long, full-length comedy concert film. Mark Maron doing some stand-up. He did a small venue, most comedy films. Big venue, big theater. Mm-hmm. He did a real small, I think he said it was like 150-person auditorium. And just did a real intimate setting. Just kind of really, not a lot of cuts to the audience. It's mostly, you're sitting down, you're listening to this guy talk, and you're kind of hanging out with him. It's a comedian I like quite a bit. I'm not the biggest fan of his podcast. I like it okay. But I really like Mark Maron as a comedian, so I'm excited about that. And another comedian-centric thing I'm excited about, a comedian whose podcast I adore, Pete Holmes, host of You Made It Weird with Pete Holmes on the Nerdist Podcast Network, is now the host of his own late-night talk show. He follows Conan on TBS, and it's called The Pete Holmes Show, sensically. and I'm excited about it. I actually haven't got to watch a single episode of it yet. It premiered last night, so Monday the 28th. Was the first episode, and it's something I'm really excited about. I'm probably going to go watch it when we get done with this.
Nice.
So those are things to be excited about. I'm excited about comedy right now. I like stand-up comedy a lot. So.
Well, good deal. Well, Mr. Arthur Gordon, are you fired up as well, sir?
There are a couple things. Picked up Batman Arkham Origins over the weekend.
I did too.
I haven't got very far.
I haven't either. In,
but I enjoy it. Those games are all a lot of fun.
Man, that. And yeah, so it's fun to beat people up in those.
It is. I like it a lot. Today, or Tuesday, the 29th of October, the trailer for X-Men Days of Future Past came out.
It did.
And it looks epic. And Fassbender. That's, need I say more?
Just a bunch of people trying to have a big old acting fight.
And I am sold. I will be there.
Here's the thing I like about the people that they get cast in the X-Men movies. They bring their game.
Yeah.
Just because they're in a comic book movie, they're not slouching.
Yeah.
I mean, Hugh Jackman brings his A game no matter how many times he plays Wolverine. Patrick Stewart is a classically trained Shakespearean actor. So is Ian McClellan. These are both guys that could phone it in like a lot of their contemporaries.
Yeah.
Cast and
Robert De Niro.
I was going to say Kingsley. Kingsley's been known to phone it in. These guys bring their A game, regardless of the silliness of the material.
So I am excited about that. The other thing... I caught the season premiere of series premiere actually of Dracula.
Is it good?
I'm into it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give it a couple episodes. They do some odd things with some of the characters and the way they play it, but I'm gonna give it a little bit and see what happens. But the other thing is, I was on Netflix the other morning. I was just looking for something to watch. I started the first episode of The Following.
Oh, you're done.
About five episodes later, I had to move on with my life. But I'm hooked. It's a lot of fun.
That show is good.
I don't know if it's going to be great or whatever, but it's addictive and it's fun. It's a good binge.
Season two starts in January.
And so Kevin Bacon is a lot of fun. And they do some really vicious stuff for broadcast TV. And it's something that we're seeing in Hannibal. I'm sure it's something we're going to see with Dracula. And it's that kind of that echo from Dexter and from The Sopranos and from those shows on cable kind of pushing into broad network TV. And so you're kind of seeing that that influence coming through on these newer shows that are really dark for the networks. And so I like that. I like them kind of trying to push and break the ground and do new things on network TV. So, but
excellent.
On to you.
Excellent. Couple things for me. First of all, I did go to Macabre on Friday night with my lady. It was a lot of fun. It is pop music with some sort of supernatural and/or scary movie sort of theme. Sometimes it is less connected than you might think.
So, what are some things?
I mean, obviously thriller, right?
Yeah.
Superstition, right? I put a spell on you.
Oh yeah.
So that's those kind of things. I saw a rendition of Patsy Cline's Crazy. that will haunt me for the rest my life.
That sounds awesome.
So was lots of fun, and I think they're going to do it again next year.
That's cool.
You should go. Cool. It's great. Another thing, I heard a rumor. I didn't realize this. I talk about theory and theorists who talk about movies. Another one of those theorists is Cornel West, and he actually has a cameo role in the Matrix sequels, both Reloaded and Revolutions.
Really?
And there is an Ultimate Edition of The Matrix featuring commentary on all three films by Mr. Cornel West.
Does he do? I know there's. I knew there was a film analyst, a film critique commentary on. Is it him on all of them?
On the Ultimate Edition, yes.
Okay. That's the Blu-ray edition.
The Blu-ray, I suppose so.
Yeah, okay, cool.
It must happen. Dear listener, do phone in or call in or text in, and I'll give you my address for that gift. Because I'd like for that to happen, because, yay, that was loads and loads of cool and very much fun, and I like that.
Shocktober's over, ladies and gentlemen.
It's been lots of fun. But we got to move into November. And I have circled around the sun once again, or will have by next week sometime. And so...
It's Dustin's turn to pick.
I get a pick. And so I thought something very philosophical. Something that's going to make us think together, you know. The big questions, you know. Is it fate? Is it luck? Is it karma?
Spit it out there, Barbara.
I believe that everything happens for a reason. And the reason is that we would get to podcast a little movie called Ghostbusters. And so next week,
Shocktober continues a little
kind
bit.
Kind of.
Yeah. A little
it
bit.
Bleeds
a little
into,
extension.
Bleeds into November.
It bleeds a little bit. We're going to talk about one of my favorite movies of all time. I'm very glad that it was on the bumper music for our Shocktober.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about it ever since, and it's got to happen.
It's going to be a fun time. I like that movie a lot.
It's going to be fun, and we know that many of you have seen it already. Give it another whirl.
I'm happy to revisit it.
Tell us what you think about it, because, yeah, it's good stuff, you know.
What's the old GB make you think about?
Mm-hmm. And there are things to be thought, let me tell you, dear listener. So, we'll see you next time. Check out Ghostbusters. Keep the conversation going with us individually. I'm on Twitter at Dustin_Sells. That's SELLS. To my left...
I am located on Twitter at doll_stew, as in exactly what you think, as in.
And to the right?
I am found at RNDTBLReview, as in Roundtable Review.
And we would like to keep talking with you. We'll see you next time, and we'll see some good trash and see that it means something and do some thinking with it. Until then, have a great Halloween, be safe, and we'll semi-continue on into November.
I do wish we could chat longer, but... I'm having an old friend for dinner.